creeping, I stay up and think of you. And I still can't believe that you came up to me and said, I love you, I love you too. Now I'm dreaming with you tonight till tomorrow.
WLTW New York. Welcome to Get Connected with Nina Del Rio, a weekly conversation about fitness, health, and happenings in our community on 106.7 Light FM.
Thanks for listening to Get Connected, where we love highlighting the performing arts, especially in the fall when there's so much to see. The Limón Dance Company celebrates its 78th season, appearing at the Joyce Theater November 5th through 10th. Our guest is Artistic Director Dante Puleo for a chat about the historic programs Limón Dance Company will bring to the Joyce very soon. Dante Puleo, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tickets are now on sale for performances at joyce.org, and you can find out more about the Limón Dance Company at limón.nyc. Limón Dance Company is one of the most enduring dance companies in the world, one of the most important in the history of modern dance. Dante, you are the sixth artistic director in the company's 78-year history. Can we start with a little bit about your background and what was your path to joining Limón Dance Company?
You bet. It was all a little bit of a surprise to me. I came to dance rather late. I thought I was going to be a therapist, and that's what I started to go to college for. But then I took a dance class and I really loved it. And the teacher was like, you know, you really should consider this. And I was like, consider this for what? And she was like, a job. And I just fell in love with it. And, you know, I got connected with the right schools and the right people and I had some really wonderful training. And then I auditioned for the Limón Company as a young artist just to kind of see where I was in the field. And I was really surprised when I was offered a contract. And then, you know, I had a really wonderful career with modern dance and, musical theater, as well as, you know, film and television and stuff. And so when I retired, I went back to school thinking I was going to be a teacher. And then my research was really about contextualizing mid-century modern dance for contemporary audiences. You know, how to make modern dance cool again, really. And so when the opportunity came to apply for the artistic director position, I jumped at it. And then COVID happened. And then, you know, I was really lucky. I ended up in this really great spot and now I get to do this really great job.
Let's go to what you just said there in the beginning of this. How do you make modern dance cool again?
If I tell you, then everyone will start doing it. My research really was like revolved around the writing of it. What really situated modern dance in the early days was the critics, John Martin, Edwin Denby, these people who were writing about modern dance as it was happening. So it really helped inform and educate people about this new form. So I was thinking about how that can be related to today and what that looks like. So I started doing a lot of writing about what other companies were doing and how they were exciting audiences. And what I came to realize was it really was about contextualizing, like, what are people doing? Why are they doing it? And can we let the audience know that before they come into the theater, as they're in the theater, maybe there's little sound bites during the show, just to give people a little bit of insight as to what's happening and why it's happening. So it's not such an alien dance form. You know, dance itself is so hard to understand. So, and, sorry, I cut you off.
Well, modern dance in particular can be really inscrutable, right? You don't understand. It's like a painting with a big block on the front sometimes. What is the reason for this? Yeah.
A little bit.
So for people who aren't familiar with Le Monde Dance Company in particular, how would you describe it? How would you describe the work and what makes the company unique?
That's a beautiful question. So Jose Limon was born in Mexico and he came to the United States thinking he was going to be a painter. And then he saw dance and he was like, I don't want to continue to go on unless I learn to do what this is. So he became known as the greatest dancer of his time and then the most prolific choreographer of the 20th century. And really what, for me, what it is the technique of the dance itself is about falling and recovering. It's about the body's relationship to gravity, which is really different than our previous experience with dance in the early 1900s. So it was all, you know, ballet and defying gravity and stories about ghosts and fairy tales. And this was really leaning into the human condition. What is it to fall? What is it to hope? What is it to recover? And what is it to be in a community that believes in that? So the work really focuses around that. You know, he pulls from Shakespeare and he pulls from the Bible and he pulls from all of these well-known stories, but it all comes back to this human condition of hope and despair and continuing to hope. And finding each other and community inside of that.
That is fantastic. Let's talk about the performances after I remind everybody about them. They are at the Joyce Theater, November 5th through 10th. Tickets are on sale now at joyce.org. You can find out more about the Le Monde Dance Company at Limon, L-I-M-O-N. NYC. We're speaking with artistic director Dante Puleo. You're listening to Get Connected on 106.7 Light FM. I'm Nina Del Rio. So other than the celebration of Le Monde Dance Company's 78th season, which in a way is sort of random, perhaps maybe I'm missing something. Is there a theme that ties together these performances? Of all the repertoire you could have chosen, why these pieces in this particular show?
Well, you mentioned November 5th or the 10th, and if anyone isn't aware, that might be election week. So we have a preview on election night, and then we open officially on Wednesday night the following evening. I was really leaning into this feeling that Jose choreographed from. You know, coming to this country as a young person, feeling marginalized, being bullied, he really always led or felt, from my research and from my understanding of dancing the works, was an outsider looking in. And I feel all of us are in sort of this place right now of feeling a little marginalized, feeling on the outside, with political tensions being so high as they are. There's so much tension in the atmosphere. And I really wanted to lean into that and let people walk through that and feel that you're not alone. We are all experiencing this really heightened sense of reality right now. And so I chose works that I think leaned into that experience. Go ahead.
There is one that has sort of a title that's emblematic of that, perhaps. I don't know anything about it. The Traitor, mm-hmm. which is Jose Limon's piece. Can you talk about, you know, the elements that are unique to Jose in that piece and what is new in this production?
Yeah, so Jose was looking at McCarthyism, at the Red Scare, at this idea of communism, and how artists and people were all betraying each other not to get incarcerated or imprisoned or any of these other, you know, things that could have happened to them. And so he was pulling from that, and then he used the story of the Last Supper of Jesus and Judas to tell that story. And it's really from Judas's perspective, which is not something we normally hear when we're thinking about the Gethsemane or Last Supper. We think about, you know, the perspective from Jesus. So he pulls it and he's like, well, let's look at it from the other side. What is someone else experiencing that has been traditionally thought of as evil? And what does that actually look like? What does the story look like from that vantage point? So he really deconstructs that. And for this moment now, this will be the first time it's been traditionally cast with all men. And this will be the first season that we have men women and non-binary dancers performing the roles.
I do believe Scherzo is the same thing, right? That is another piece originally performed by male dancers.
Correct. And he choreographed it in the early 50s. It went untouched until 1981 and then was untouched again. So we haven't seen it in over 45 years. So I'm really excited to have people experience this work. And it's on the other side. It's light. It's joyous. It's four people throwing a drum around and it's just 10 minutes of levity and rhythm, which I think we also need a little bit in this moment.
Just a bit of a technical question. When you're looking at work that hasn't been performed in 30 years or even more, what kind of sources are you referring to find the original choreography?
We have a lot of writings, either that Jose himself did or that Carla Maxwell, the previous artistic director, did when she reconstructed this particular work. So we have these really nice, robust reconstruction packets that we pull from. We have video. We have the music. And then we have people who may have danced some of these roles that will come in and coach us, after we've pulled from the video, or other works that people are still dancing or that have been in the rep. Then we pull from the different generations and they'll come and work with us and stage the work. So we don't have to rely on video so much and we can actually have the oral tradition of dance passed down. So it just depends on who was in the work and who is available to help us bring it back to life.
It would be pretty incredible to speak with someone who's worked on a piece 40 years ago and earlier, right? Their memory, their experience.
Well, you also get like the anecdotes. Like you get, oh, this one time when we were performing here, or this, oh, this is the way this thing happened in this rehearsal that one day. So it becomes such like a living testament to art. You know, you get to live inside of this moment and then carry that moment forward, which is just such a beautiful experience to be able to pass down.
Another piece in this performance coming up at the Joyce is in two ecstatic themes. What elements of modern dance are we going to see that's unique to that choreographer, which is also the company's first artistic director, Doris Humphrey?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Such a great question. I like to make sure that our audiences get a full breadth of what dance is, can be, was. So by including a work of Doris Humphrey's, you get this elemental moment of that first dance that was breaking away from the traditions of ballet, this first experience of what it is to actually fall and then what it is to recover from that fall. And so it's this really like early exploration. And it's this beautiful 6-minute solo. And it's just this woman in white falling and then recovering. And it's just, you know, really, really impactful and powerful to be able to see where it all started and then, you know, where it goes to.
Our conversation started with your work about a discussion about your work about making modern dance more relatable. How can audience members prepare or get involved before seeing these performances?
That's a great question. They can check out our social media. You know, we're all over the place, obviously. Our website, lemon.nyc. You can get more backstory, especially with social media. You can meet some of the dancers, see them working in process, see what they're up to. So you get a little bit more of just an understanding of the scope of what we're doing before you walk into the theater.
These are also performances at the Joyce, a venue for dance. And I feel like they're very sophisticated audiences at the Joyce. What do they tend to respond to?
That's a good question. I performed there many times when I was dancing with the company. This is only my second time as an artistic director. So I think I'm still figuring that out. I'm, you know, developing what the next generation of audiences look like while still honoring the people who have been with us for maybe 78 years. So I like to give them that, you know, that early modern dance, the later modern dance, and then the new commissions to excite my younger audiences as well.
It's a really interesting role you have. You know, you're presenting mid-century modern dance, also finding contemporary experiences for audiences. Can you talk a little bit about that role and why do you think the company has endured for 78 years kind of meeting in the middle there?
Yeah. The work itself just continues to speak to generation after generation. It speaks to some really basic human truths. And the way that I told you Jose was a painter. So the way that he was able to choreograph it just looks like these beautiful paintings that are moving and alive, and the way he was able to build architecture and have space move and people move through space, it's completely captivating and totally spellbinding. So you really can't pull your eyes away from it, and you want to go back and see it again and again.
Anything else you want to say about the performances coming up there at the Joyce, November 5th through 10th?
You bet. I would be remiss not to mention Kayla Farish's new work. When I look at Jose's work, I look at the old, you know, his original works and how they're in conversation with the current moment. And Kayla Farish is this really exciting early career choreographer. This is her first company commission, and she pulled from two lost works of Limón's, looked at images and writings, and created this new work about a collective consciousness, about communities awakening in different ways at different times. And she created this really beautiful piece that I'm so excited for people to see, because I think it just takes the company in a brand new direction.
And again, feels very timely given the dates right around Election Day. Limón Dance Company is at the Joyce Theater November 5th through 10th. Our guest has been Artistic Director Dante Paleo. Tickets are on sale now for performances at the venue, joyce.org. You can find out more about Limón Dance Company at limón.nyc, limón.nyc. Dante Paleo, thank you for being on Get Connected.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking to you.
This is Get Connected with Nina Del Rio on 106.7 Light FM.
More than one in five U.S. adults live with a mental illness, according to the CDC. From medication to therapy, diet, lifestyle changes, we know there are a number of ways to treat this chronic condition. But Jared K. Anderson, a best-selling author and podcast host who lives with mental illness, says treatment can be found in the woods, literally, and gives us the tools to see it all anew. In his new book, Something in the Woods Loves You, Jared Anderson explores the inherent ways nature can help fight mental illness. Jared, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Jared K. Anderson is a writer, poet, and creator of the Crypto Naturalist podcast, a scripted show about real adoration for fictional wildlife. He's built a large audience of social media followers and podcast listeners for his vibrant appreciations of nature. I love the title of this book, Jared. And so I grew up in the woods, actually, but have lived in the New York area for about 30 years. And maybe that's the reason why at first thought upon seeing Something in the Woods Love You, Something in the Woods Loves You, there's something scary out there was my first thought. You know, a human alone in the wilderness. For some, that's an extremely vulnerable, even scary thought. How do you think of wild places?
So I also grew up in sort of a rural environment, and some of my earliest memories are taking daily nature walks with my mother. So the book, Something in the Woods Loves You, is really the story of kind of the low point of my depression and finding a path back to myself and ways to make meaning that serve me. So the woods, which was kind of a return to a foundational thought for me, really stood in to represent that.
Often we have a connection with nature in our younger years. Again, you know, curiosity about bugs or climbing trees or a pond. And that's that wonder and imagination that we rarely tap into as adults. And this book does not suggest that nature is going to magically cure you. But can you talk about noticing the natural world at that particularly dark point, and what did it get you to think about?
Well, yes, I'm very careful in the book not to say, you know, go touch a tree and you'll feel all better. But one of the main things I've learned as somebody with chronic major depression is that depression lies to us, and depression defends itself. And really through the mechanism of shame, whether tied to societal stigma or, you know, masculinity, or all these reasons I had to keep silent. One thing I really had to do first and foremost was decide that I was worth the work. And in returning to nature and walking beneath the trees, I sort of would feel those pressures and those external stigmas fall away. You know, under the trees, I felt more like an animal, somebody connected to the trees that were making the oxygen I breathed, the hills where the iron in my blood came from. And I found that I sort of effortlessly, naturally could access a love for natural landscapes. And intellectually, I understood that as a human creature, I'm part of those landscapes. So the connection there was, all right, how can I start to extend this natural, this instinctual love for nature to myself? And that really was a key for me to unlock all of the subsequent healing.
Most of the people who will listen to this show are in the New York City metro area. So we don't, you know, it's harder for us to go out and sort of have that immediate connection with nature. What we have is we have pigeons and we have squirrels. So I'm wondering if you could give us a rethink of maybe something that's in front of us, like squirrels in particular.
Yeah. So I have a whole chapter on gray squirrels. Mm-hmm. They're one of my favorite animals. And I think the danger in modernity is that we're told there's a correct way to do these things, an authentic way. Like you have to show up to an old growth forest or a national park. And it just isn't so. I mean, what we're looking to do is to kindle that realization that we're a part of nature. And if that is lichen on a sidewalk, if that is a tree in the landscaping, if that is glimpsing a gray squirrel that might be at home in a city park the same way it would have been at home 400 years ago in America. I mean, squirrels are one of our most important forest regenerators. They're just a fascinating creature. And that is connecting with nature. You know, you don't need to buy a ticket to do it correctly. It's really more of a state of mind.
Our guest is Jared K. Anderson. He has three previous books that are all bestsellers: Field Guide to the Haunted Forest, Love Notes from the Hollow Tree, and Leaf Litter. He lives in Ohio between a forest and a cemetery. I love the cemetery part. The new book is Something in the Woods Loves You. His website is jaredkanderson.com. You're listening to Get Connected on 106.7 Light FM. I'm Nina Del Rio. As you write in the book, many things I totally agree with. There's this one phrase: it's amazing the number of mental hurts that are soothed by simply focusing our senses on our immediate place and moment. Focusing our senses on what, for example?
I think it almost doesn't matter so long as it's anchored to your place in the current moment. Because part of what depression does to me is that it nudges me out of the present moment. It nudges me into all of these sort of corrosive abstractions. You know, I'm not producing enough. I'm not, you know, living up to my potential in some abstract way. I messed up in a conversation 2 weeks ago. You know, you get shoved into all of these abstract ways to bully yourself. And sometimes just anchoring in your own physicality, in your space and the moment, is a way to take back the power from those sort of bullying abstractions that I think haunt a lot of us.
It's a very hopeful book and a hopeful thing that you're saying, right? You're getting out of the weight of mental illness, which has hijacked your brain. What does it mean to allow yourself to have a sliver of hope?
It's scary at first. It requires a kind of vulnerability, because in the depths of depression, hope can be a dangerous thing, because it feels like it's another avenue to disappointment. So it's a leap of faith that I'm going to put out this effort, and this depression that is lying to me and telling me that it's just an objective view on a broken world or a broken self, I'm going to take a leap of faith and start doing these small steps toward wellness with a kind of stubborn trust that they will get me somewhere.
You tell the story of your mother's cousin later in the book who died by suicide, and hearing your mother describe her as difficult to love. It is such a burden when you feel that internally. Yet some of us would choose agony rather than ask for help. Can you talk a bit about endurance through vulnerability and how you address that in the book?
Yeah, I think vulnerability is such a key aspect of healing, and I think our culture doesn't value it the way it should, because we think about community and we think about resources, and I think a lot of us think of like, all right, well, I would lend a hand to my neighbor to carry groceries, but how many of us are comfortable asking for help or admitting our own weakness or, you know, our own imperfection or fallibility? And all of these things are scary moves toward vulnerability, but they're also the only way we can access our key strength as humans, which is to rely on the strength of each other and our connection and our community. You know, we're not all experts in everything. All of this is kind of distributed through the human family. And unless we're willing to take the risk of vulnerability, we can't tap into this key strength of what makes humanity, you know, a resilient creature.
Speaking of resiliency, raccoons. We often see them as scavengers and thieves. A lot of people have a lot of thoughts about raccoons as animals. What have you learned to see in them?
Raccoons became they became emblematic for me of this idea that nature isn't always the graceful herons, you know, or gliding swans. It's sometimes the lesson I need from nature is raccoons, which are, there are things outside my control. There are seasons and days where I'm going to have a bad mental health day. And I can choose to look to the raccoon and say, all right, I'm not going to be destroyed by this. I'm not going to shame myself. I'm not going to say my identity is broken because I'm having a tough day. I'm going to look to the raccoons and say, look, you know, if I eat crumbs and stay in sweatpants all day and I'm a weird little trash goblin, some days that's what success looks like. Some days it's just stacking up the moments and trusting that because we are natural, our minds are natural, they relate to seasons and cycles, I'll get through this. And just getting through this is something the raccoons are very good at it.
You say in the book, the nature of depression is that your own memory is not always a reliable keeper of important lessons and milestones. How do you find, or how do you balance that perhaps with something in the outdoors?
Yeah, well, the outdoors is there and it's not reliant on our own memories, right? So yeah, I mean, mental illness is such a tough disease because the organ that is the problem, our brains, are also our best tool to fight it. And when I walk outside, when I look to natural landscapes for lessons, I feel like one of the things I'm doing is kind of like using nature as an extension of my own mind, because it's there in an inarguable way, right? It kind of goes back to the physicality we were talking about returning to the moment. So if I observe a squirrel or a raccoon or a pigeon and look at sort of the bare facts of nature and kind of the dignity and wholeness I feel there, I can find ways to extend that to myself, even when I can't trust my own perspective because of the illness, you know, the shame or the condemnation. Like if I can let it fall away and be in the moment with the nature I'm observing, I just always find that very medicinal.
How did writing this book, Jared, recounting specific and significant, both dark and hopeful signposts in your life, impact you?
Well, it's been 4 or 5 years in the making, and I share a lot of nature poetry and writing about mental health online, and I get a lot of messages from folks that want to discuss mental health. And I started to come up with this concept of the long talk. You know, I wanted to go on a 3-day camping trip with each of these folks and have the long talk about what I had learned and my missteps. And so this book became that. It's the long talk. It's everything I wanted to share that I felt like I learned about my own mind and my own struggles toward mental health. So this was an important project for me that, one of the things that always brings me back to the keyboard is this feeling that I'm doing service. That'll make me write even when I'm struggling with other motivations in light of my mental health struggles. And this book is that. It's me trying to do an act of service.
It is a very beautiful book. Something in the Woods Loves You by Jared K. Anderson. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to talk to you.
This has been Get Connected with Nina Del Rio on 106.7 Light FM. The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of the station. If you missed any part of our show or want to share it, visit our website for downloads and podcasts at 106.7lightfm.com. Thanks for listening.
iHeartRadio Music You Should Know, featuring Benson Boone. Slow It Down.
I never met you, but I wanted to invite you to the party. And you walked in with those green eyes, never stolen by nobody. And they flickered to the future for a moment I could picture. Then you touched me and I come back, and we're talking on the staircase about your big dreams on the big screens out of Georgia. Now you're lonely in this city, lying with me, and you're scared it's moving quickly. Oh, now you're crying, you're in pieces, 'cause the only love you've ever known is Jesus. I can feel it. Oh, I hate that I'm the reason that you're in your head right now, while your world is spinning out. So slow it down, take a moment now. We're too young to drown. Deep and dirty waters full of hope is down. Let me pull you out. Let me hold you now. Let me slow it down. Ain't it funny how it changes, how the future rearranges? I get nervous, oh, I'm anxious. Maybe loving you is dangerous. I could lose you like the others. Only girl that's never left me is my mother. Oh, I love her, and I know you probably hate it, but I'm in my head right now. So I never met you, but I wanted to invite you to the party. And you walked in with those green eyes, never stolen by nobody. And they flicker to the future.
Create your own Benson Boone custom station with iHeartRadio. Download the app or listen at iHeartRadio.com.
Hey there, it's Michael Lewis, author of Going Infinite, The Big Short, Moneyball, and Liar's Poker. On the latest season of my podcast, Against the Rules, I'm exploring what it means to be a sports fan in America and what the rise of sports betting is doing to our teams, our states, and ourselves. I'm heading to Las Vegas and New Jersey and beyond to understand America's newest form of legalized gambling. Listen to Against the Rules on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app, search Against the Rules, and start listening.
Strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song. I heard he sang a good song.
satisfy the crowd. I felt he found my letters and read each one out loud. I prayed that he would finish, but he just kept right on.
Just a man. These nights never seem to go to plan. I don't want you to leave. Will you hold my hand? Oh, won't you stay with me? 'Cause you're all I need. This ain't love, it's clear to see. But darling, stay with me. Why am I so emotional? No, it's not a good look and some self-control. Deep down I know this never works. But you can lay with me so it doesn't hurt. Oh, won't you stay with me? 'Cause you're all I need. This ain't love, it's clear to see. But darling, stay with me.
There's a calm surrender to the rush of day. When the heat of a rolling wave can't be turned away, an enchanted moment, and it sees me through. It's enough for this restless warrior just to be with you. And can you feel the love tonight? It is where we are. It's enough for this warrior. They only learn that the twist and kaleidoscope moves us all in turn. There's a rhyme and reason to the wild outdoors. When the heart of the star-crossed Voyager beats in time with yours. It is where we are. It's enough for this wide-eyed wanderer that we got this far. And can you feel the love tonight? I was late. It's enough to make kings and vagabonds believe the very best.
106.7 Light FM, easing into Sunday morning with Elton John. Good to be with you. I'm Nina Del Rio. Although lots of folks are getting right to it this morning, the Tunnel to Towers Run and Walk is this morning, honoring Stephen Siller and the 9/11 first responders downtown, benefiting the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, which does so much good work for veterans, first responders, and their families. That event has just gotten bigger year after year, which is fantastic. Whatever you are doing, thank you for starting this Sunday right here. I am Nina Del Rio, pleased to be with you.
Hey there, it's Michael Lewis, author of Going Infinite, The Big Short, Moneyball, and Liar's Poker. On the latest season of my podcast, Against the Rules, I'm exploring what it means to be a sports fan in America and what the rise of sports betting is doing to our teams, our states, and ourselves. I'm heading to Las Vegas and New Jersey and beyond to understand America's newest form of legalized gambling. Listen to Against the Rules on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app, search Against the Rules, and start listening.
For all those times you stood by me, for all the truth that you made me see, for all the joy you brought to my life, for all the wrong that you made right, for every dream you made.
Right now, get up to 40% off select home decor to put the finishing touches on every room. The savings don't stop there. Get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, save an additional $75 on select cooking appliances, $899 or more. Because Lowe's knows holiday hosting. Valid through 10/16. While supplies last. Selection varies by location. Appliance savings vary based on purchase amount. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for details.
The Notebook the Musical is on Broadway through December 15th only. The Chicago Tribune gives The Notebook 4 stars, calling it absolutely gorgeous, not to be missed. Amsterdam News declares The Notebook is one of the most epic, romantic, touching musicals ever to grace Broadway. And the Today Show says The Notebook is everything. Run, don't walk. Don't miss the most breathtaking new musical on Broadway. Through December 15th only. Get tickets at notebookmusical.com.
Tommy! I can't wait for golf this weekend, huh, buddy? Time flies. Love you, man. Oh, don't forget your knee brace again. We aren't in college anymore.
Moments together matter. So help protect yourself from RSV. If you're 75 or older or 60 plus with a chronic condition like asthma, COPD, heart disease, or severe diabetes, you're at higher risk of landing in the hospital from RSV. And there are no prescription RSV treatments. Check eligibility and schedule your RSV vaccine at VaxAssist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
September is Hunger Action Month, and HelloFresh believes everyone should have access to fresh and nutritious food. That is why iHeart Impact is supporting HelloFresh's Meals with Meaning program, which distributes over 40,000 free meal kits in cities across the country with easy-to-follow and adaptable recipes to people facing food insecurity every week. Together, we are working to combat hunger in our local communities. Learn more at HelloFresh.com.
Walk in honor. Walk in memory. Walk United to end ALS. ALS United Greater New York will be hosting Walk ALS in 6 locations this year. NYC, Westchester, New Jersey, Jersey Shore, Long Island, and Hudson Valley. ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, is an incurable, terminal disease affecting as many as 30,000 annually. Proceeds will fund local patient services and cutting-edge research. Join ALS United Greater New York to march together towards a cure for ALS. For more information and to register, visit ALSWalks.org today.
WLTW New York.
All your favorite music.
Turn it up.
106.7 Light FM.